Today on Richard Ellis Talks.
Now you say, well, I'm not going to keep asking him. Then you know what? You may never see something happen. Because one way to get God's attention is to persevere in prayer and stay with it. Now you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know what? A lot of this stuff doesn't make sense to me, but that's what faith is about. You do it anyway.
Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Thanks for allowing us to share this time with you. You may be stuck in traffic or stuck in life. Either way, today's message is going to help you get on the right track as you learn how much God loves you right where you are. Richard's unique style checks all the boxes with a lot of hope, insight, truth, and of course, humor. Today's talk with Richard will get our conversation started, but we want to keep it going with you. So let's stay in touch through our website, richardellis.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get right into today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is The Daily Grind. And I thought, you know, there's just stuff in life that just every day just grinds away on us. One of the things I brought with me today, if you're listening and not here, this is one of the tubs at my house. Now, this particular tub, this plastic big tub, this is one of the sock tubs. Now, if you have these, see, I wear like a size 13 shoe, so at my house, my socks are pretty easy to pull out and match. But I got four women, and their feet are getting closer and closer to the same size. All these socks, and I wash clothes, I fold clothes. You know, you're going through this mound of clothes, you pull the towels out first because you can get the towels folded, some jeans, you can get those folded. Then the word I thought I would never have to say as much as I do, but then you got a dryer full of panties, and there's nothing but panties in my house. And I can't describe to you still the consternation I have separating panties out. And then I put them all in a stack. I'm like, you're lucky I touched them and stacked them. Don't be asking me to sort them. Because God knows whose panties are whose, you know, just you sort them. You go through all that, and the last thing in the deal is all these little straggler socks. Now, I don't put them in there. I really try to sort them. But I think somebody in my house is just giving up and throwing them in here. Then the girls come up in these bins, and they start sorting when they need socks. It's just this everyday stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, let's buy paper plates so we don't have to load and unload the dishwasher because it just all the time. I hate unloading it. For some reason, I'm okay with loading it. But the sorting all that stuff. And there's things, you know, taking the trash out. When you're the only man in the house, you get to do it more. It's just one of those blessings. You get to do it. But they keep filling up this trash bag and it's got to go out. And you realize, you know what? There's nothing very glamorous in life when you get right down to it. It's just a bunch of everyday stuff. And on top of the everyday stuff, then there's stuff that just grinds on you. And maybe you're in a marriage, it's not so good. And you just, you know, you pray you don't wake up or she doesn't wake up or he doesn't wake up. You know, just the peace, if there's any peace, because the second everybody is awake, here it goes again, that constant grinding. Maybe you got trouble with kids. Maybe it's your boss. Maybe it's employees. Maybe it's your job. We've all got stuff that grinds, and I'm telling you what, it may not be going away. Life is full of just daily grind. Epictetus, a Greek philosopher, he put it this way, "Difficulties show men what they are. In case of any difficulty, remember that God has pitted you against a rough antagonist that you may be a conqueror, and this cannot be done without toil." Someone, I don't know who said this, "The daily grind of hard work gets a person polished." And W.H. Auden wrote, "A tremendous number of people in America work very hard at something that bores them. Even a rich man thinks he has to go down to the office every day, not because he likes it, but because he can't think of anything else to do." Harriet Beecher Stowe said, "To be really great in little things, to be truly noble and heroic in the insipid details of everyday life is a virtue so rare as to be worthy of canonization." And I love the way she puts it, the insipid details of every day. Grind, one way to translate it is hard work or hard, monotonous, routine work. And we got from the poorest of the poor to the richest of the rich in our church. And there are people in our church, truck drivers, manual laborers who run big equipment. And every day they wake up, unless they quit or die or get promoted, they are going back to a machine that is going to eat up their materials and say, feed me, feed me, feed me, and day after day, and the days as a man, maybe you say, you know what, I can't do this anymore, and men do it every day. They say, I'm done. I don't want the responsibility of a wife. I don't want the responsibility of these kids. I'm on a Corvette convertible, red preferably. I'm out of here. And they check out because they can't take the everyday grind of life and what comes with it. But it's going to keep coming, and unless you're going to quit, it's out there. And it may be till the day you died. Go to Genesis chapter 3, and let's give you a little background of where all this stuff comes from. Genesis chapter 3, and to set this up a little bit, I recommend reading Genesis, the early parts, because it explains a lot of the mess that we're in. And whether you believe this or not or agree with this or not, the whole world is screwed up because of sin. Everything can be traced to sin. You got no sickness without sin. You got no problems without sin. You got everything is messed up because of sin. And the reason the whole God thing is so huge, and Jesus in particular living, dying on the cross, being buried and raised from the dead is so massive, is that it provides an answer in this life, here and in the hereafter, for the sin problem. And if you got a sin problem, you're not going to fix the sin problem without Jesus. Get that out there in case there was some question. Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. Adam and Eve, and by the way, Adam is responsible. Eve screwed up and gets blamed for all this, but Adam should have done something about it. There's consequence to the sin. The serpent has consequence. Eve has consequence in childbearing. And Adam, it says in verse 17, then to Adam he said, this is God speaking to Adam, because you have heeded the voice of your wife, it's not advocating not listening to your wife. Don't anybody misquote this. I'm not going to listen to her because that's what got us all in trouble to begin with. Because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Now, what a thing to hear. He's in this perfect garden. He's told that. Eventually, he's thrown out of the garden. It's guarded, and he's out there and discovers that tending a garden was a pretty sweet deal, walking and talking with God in the cool of the day compared to being out here toiling and tilling ground that had been cursed. Go to Genesis chapter 5, just a few pages over. This gets mentioned again, and a guy named Lamech names a kid. And it's interesting, the kid that he names in this context, Genesis 5:28. Lamech lived 182 years and had a son, and he called his name Noah, saying, this one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. And Noah means rest. So it's so arduous, it's so painful, it's so grinding on them every day. They literally name a kid Noah just so when they see him, maybe he'll represent some rest and like maybe this isn't going to last forever. Go to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1 and following. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. And the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, to the place from which the rivers come. There they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Just talking about this day in, day out, coming and going, coming and going. And it's all vanity. Go to Exodus chapter 5. You're going to have to go back. We were in Genesis. The next book is Exodus. Exodus chapter 5, and I'm going to read a little piece here. Moses has been sent with Aaron to tell Pharaoh to let my people go. In Exodus chapter 5, verse 1, let's start there and kind of see what these people were stuck with. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. And Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. So they said, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence and with sword. Then the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? Get back to your labor. And Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are many now, and you make them rest from their labor. So the same day, listen to what Pharaoh does. Now these God's people, Israel, is stuck there, prisoners in Egypt, slaves basically serving Pharaoh, and they are making bricks for the buildings that they're making. And the same day, verse verse 6, Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, "You shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Let more work be laid on the men, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words." It gets worse for them. God sent somebody to deliver them, and it gets worse. And I think the parallel here sometimes is, okay, I say, I'll trust God. I got all these problems in my life, and somebody said, well, Jesus saves. And Jesus will fix it all. Give your life to Jesus and it's all going to be great. You're going to be wealthy, healthy, prosper. Everything's going to be wonderful. And you give your life to Jesus and all hell breaks loose. And you read the Bible and it talks about all these wonderful things and peace and joy and love and heaven. What a wonderful place it'll be. But your life seems to be getting worse and worse. And it seems to all have turned on you committing your life to Christ. Now, how do you have some deliverer come and say, I'm here to set you free, and from the get-go, it infuriates the guy who's supposed to release you, and he puts more grinding work on you every day. It's hard to believe, and if you keep reading this, they're like, you know, go away, Moses. It was bad enough before you got here. We don't need any more of this. Now, if you keep reading the story in Exodus and see where it ends up, it doesn't happen overnight. But eventually, what happens? God does lead his people. He does get them out of there. And they screw up some more and die in the wilderness, most of them, until their kids end up in the promised land. Now, we're not looking for some physical promised land. We're looking for a spiritual promised land, a real heaven, a real place where God is, and there will be no more tears, no more sorrow. But in the meantime, and I like to call it the meantime, because it is meantime. And there are challenges, there are struggles in the daily grind of life, and you and I have got to figure out a way to make it in the meantime. Go to Psalm chapter 86. Psalm 86, verse 1. Bow down your ear, O Lord, hear me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my life, for I am holy. You are my God. Save your servant who trusts in you. Be merciful to me, O Lord, for I cry to you all day long. Rejoice the soul of your servant, for to you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. For you, Lord, are good and ready to forgive and abundant in mercy to all those who call upon you. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer and attend to the voice of my supplications. In the day of my trouble, I will call upon you, for you will answer me. Among the gods, there is none like you, O Lord, nor are there any works like your works. Ever feel that way? Look what he says, verse 3, for I cry to you all day long. Most of us, when we're in a bad place, if we're in a bad place, a lot of the time live quiet lives of desperation. We muster enough composure to go to work and be around people, but deep down inside, a lot of times, people are howling for help. And then if they don't know God, they can't cry out to God because they don't think that he'd listen anyway, and they're the ones that have gotten themselves in the mess. And we have usually shunned people so badly, religion in particular has said, kind of, you know what, you're no good, you're going to hell. They say, yeah, well, that's how I feel. Is there a way out of this? Oh, no, no, you got to get your life all straight and then we'll talk about it. You can't find that in the Bible. Say to people, there's hope, there's answers. Let them approach, explain to them, here's how you got here. It is sin. There is an answer. It's Jesus. And it's not going to all go away. Some of the stuff you're facing may be with you till the day you die. But if your circumstances don't change, he's going to change you. And a lot of times, that's exactly what he does. Go to Psalm 88. Another one here. Psalm 88, verse 1. O Lord, God of my salvation, I have cried out day and night before you. Let my prayer come before you. Incline your ear to my cry. For my soul is full of troubles, and my life draws near to the grave. I am counted with those who go down to the pit. I am like a man who has no strength, adrift among the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, and who are cut off from your hand. You have laid me in the lowest pit, in darkness, in the depths. Your wrath lies heavy upon me, and you have afflicted me with all your waves, Selah. You have put away my acquaintances far from me. Even the people I know are not even around anymore. You have made me an abomination to them. I am shut up and I cannot get out. My eye wastes away because of affliction. Lord, I have called daily upon you. I have stretched out my hands to you. Go to Luke chapter 18. Jesus tells a parable here. Luke 18, verse 1 and following. Then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. Now, let me stop here and say this. The daily grind. One of the biggest challenges with your daily grind is you lose heart. Now, I've talked to you about, you know, folding some clothes and taking out some trash. Talk to single mamas about daily grind. A job, two jobs, kids talking about, somebody says something about, are you going to college, and freaking a mom completely out, because how the heck is she going to pay for college if she can't even buy toaster strudels for breakfast? And it gets overwhelming. It gets overwhelming. You're like, I can't take this anymore. And you know, as sure as you wake up today, if you don't die tonight, you're going to wake up tomorrow and it's going to hit you one more time. He spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart, saying, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man, a godless judge, and he didn't regard any man to boot. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversaries. And she's a widow. She's got no one to go to bat for. But she goes to this judge and says, I want justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. She's going to wear me out. I'm going to do what she said just to get rid of her. I don't care about God or people in general, but she is pretty much declared that she is not leaving. She's going to keep coming back and harassing me till I do this. So I'm going to do what she asked just to move her on. Now look what Jesus says. And then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. Now if that is an unjust judge that can be worn out by a widow repeatedly coming back asking for something. Verse 7, and shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? Now, one of the things I can't explain to you, except that God is God and he knows what he's doing, is if I pray, let's say something's going on with a family member, and I say, God, you know what? Of course I'm screwed up. Of course I got sin. Of course I got a problem. And I confess all that, but I know I'm going to do something stupid again. But right now, God, you and me, you got to do something. And if I'm not saying it loud enough, are you deaf? Do something. Well, of course he's not deaf. He's heard you when you thought it. Okay, well, if you're so smart, God, and you're so all-powerful, and I'm saying it, how many times do I have to say it before you get it? Do something. And you say, well, he's taking his time. Well, why are you taking your time? What is that going to accomplish? We got enough pain as it is. We don't need time, do we? And yet somehow you ask for stuff and he hears you and you know he answers prayer and nothing happens. And here he's compared to an unjust judge who over time gets worn out. So I'm thinking, okay, I don't understand this. I don't get it, but let's do it anyway. And so by faith, you say, okay, I told you yesterday, do something. And nothing happens. You say, well, you know what? I'm back today. And I'm going to tell you again, do something. And this is what I think needs to be done. And either you need to change what I'm asking or you need to do something. And nothing happens today. And so tomorrow you go back and you say, you know what? Nothing happened yesterday. It's time to do something. Now you say, well, I'm not going to keep asking him. Then you know what? You may never see something happen. Because one way to get God's attention is to persevere in prayer and stay with it. Now you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know what? A lot of this stuff doesn't make sense to me, but that's what faith is about. You do it anyway. And you'd be amazed what happens if you'll just do it. Read verse 7 again with me. And shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? It takes faith. You say, but I'm tired. I'm not just tired of the daily grind. I'm tired of asking. Nothing's happening. We've had women in this church married for 30-something years pray for a slug of a husband for 20 years. And everybody say, you're nuts. You have the right to be happy. You ever heard anybody tell you that? You know what? You have the right to trust God. That's what you have the right to do. And if you want to be happy, you're just going to go screw it up again because you're rebelling against God trying to fix it your way anyway. So you're probably going to do something stupid again and get yourself in another mess. Be still, know that he's God, read the book, see what he says, and at least try that. And you say, but I can't do it anymore. Then tell him that. I can't do it anymore. You got to help me. And you'd be amazed he'll give you the strength to even keep asking. What else are you going to do?
All of our manipulation and machinations and connivings, you know what? It doesn't get anything done. Ask God to change somebody's heart, change their life, change your life. C.S. Lewis said, I love this quote, "We're not necessarily doubting that God will do the best for us. We are wondering how painful the best will turn out to be." What's it really going to take to do whatever it is God's trying to do? Go to Philippians chapter 4, and this is Paul writing to a church. He is very personal. He tells where he is, not just where you guys should be. He says, this is where I am. This is what I know. This is what I've learned. In Philippians 4, verse 11 and following, he says, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." And then verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." But what is the context of verse 13? It's about being able to live with or without. If you're about to jump off a bridge and kill yourself and you quote verse 13, "I can do all things," you know, that it's out of context. That's not what he's talking about. And people jerk these verses out of the Bible. In the daily grind, one of the only ways you're going to make it is to find a place of contentment and say, you know what? Whether I'm healthy or I'm sick, whether I'm rich, whether I'm poor, whatever my circumstances are, I know I have learned. And what he said is, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, who gives me strength. At some point, you're going to get there. Now, why would God delay sometimes the answer to our prayers? Because giving us answers, bam, 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 is easy. Getting our attention, getting us to trust him, getting us to wait for him, teaching us to be content, we're going to need that no matter what. Because even if he answers all your prayers today, there's more trouble coming. I know what I've been through. I know what I got now. But you know what? I don't have a clue about what's coming, and there could be trouble coming. I got pain coming my way, and so do you. And God says, you know what? I'm not just solving little problems here. I'm trying to get you to the place where you will listen to me, where you will love me, where you will trust me, where you will walk with me every day, so that no matter what I take you through for your sake or somebody else's, you're going to be still and be quiet and just go with it instead of getting all hot and bothered and why is this and why?
We'll get back to Richard in a moment to close out today's talk. But first, I want to share something with you about the program. Our mission is actually very simple, to take the planet. So it's our prayer that these daily talks from Richard aren't something you only hear and enjoy, but that they inspire you to share with others. Together we can do this. The message of the gospel is something everyone needs to hear, and that's why it's a huge priority to us. And you can join us in this important mission. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD to say you're in, or you can get on board with us through our website, richardellis.com. Well, here's Richard with some closing thoughts for us.
One of my favorite songs on the planet, "When peace like a river attends my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." Now, some people go to church and they open their hymnal or look at the big screen and sing a bunch of words. Let me tell you something. If you've lived that song, you're not just singing a bunch of words. When you've had to go through stuff and sorrows like sea billows roll and the grind of life has come your way and the only way you've made it is with Jesus, you don't come to sing songs to church, you come to worship. And you get in your car by yourself and life starts pouring in and life won't stop and some small place in your heart you start singing, "When peace like a river attends my way." Let me tell you something, all that stuff doesn't go away, but boy, something changes on you. And just like that, anywhere in a car, in a line, in a really bad place, in a hospital, wherever you may be, in prison, you start to sing a little song to Jesus and tell him, "You know what? You and me got some understanding. And I'm still going to keep asking you, but if nothing changes, I know how you change me, and I'm going to worship you, and I'm going to praise you anyway, no matter how long this daily grind comes, because one day I'm out of here. One day I'm out of here, and I'm going to get me a new body in a new heaven, in a new earth. And this place isn't going to hold me down. But until then, I will praise you, I will trust you, I will worship you. And not just because I've got nowhere else to go, because even if there were other options, there'd still be nobody like you. Nobody ever loved me like you love me. Enough to send your own son to die on a cross, shed his blood, be buried and raised from the dead just for me. To not just get me into heaven, but to get me through my life.
This has been Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. The message of the gospel is one we take very seriously in our mission to reach the planet. And you have a vital part of doing that along with us. If you've been encouraged by these talks with Richard, be sure to tell someone about the change they've made in your life. You can even share today's talk with them through the website, richardellis.com. And we'd love to hear your story, as well as to how these talks have made a difference to you, too. Give us a call, 855-6-RICHARD. You can also reach us through our website, richardellis.com. And while you're there, check out all the pages we put together for you, richardellis.com. Also, be sure to click on the Contribute tab to send your very generous gift. If the program is making a difference to you, your gift will make a big difference to us. Until next time, thanks so much for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.